Charleston. By reduction, McClellan meant the leveling, or in still plainer words, the destruction of Charleston, a city of some 40,000 inhabitants. The city was densely packed with homes, from three-story mansions stuffed with fine European art to backyard slave cottages, as well as dozens of churches and a handful of synagogues, schools for children and college students, hospitals, corner groceries, outdoor market stalls, scores of saloons, numerous gambling dens and brothels, a theater, and a few large meeting halls. In theory, the job could be accomplished without a single Union soldier even planting a boot on Charleston's streets by means of the cast-iron Parrot gun, capable of firing 10-pound projectiles from a mile away. The aim might not be great from that distance, but accuracy was not particularly important when the goal was simply to hit something, anything, in the city. The blunt purpose was to induce terror through the indiscriminate nature of the assault. Perhaps a shell would hit the jail on Magazine Street, where the inmates shared quarters with the rats, or then again strike the orphan house on Boundary, America's first public orphanage, where the cornerstone had been laid by President George Washington himself. As for the greatest moral effect, McClellan meant an object lesson of an inspirational and gratifying message to the North and of a cold, brutal warning to the South to lay down its obstinate arms. Charleston, he believed, was fit for a singularly severe punishment, more deserving of payback than anywhere else in the traitorous South was. This, too, McClellan took pains to convey to T.W. Sherman. "There the unnatural hatred of our government is most intense," he said. "There the rebellion had its birth." Chapter 1. Stomach for the Fight. Monday, October 17, 1859. The news flash arrived out of Baltimore at Perry O'Brien's American Telegraph office on Broad Street in downtown Charleston. As always, O'Brien's team hustled the dispatch, which they translated from Morse code, over to the newsroom of the Mercury a few blocks away. The item ran in the paper's Tuesday edition at the top of page 3, in the Latest by Telegraph feature, Dateline Baltimore. "Rumors reached this city," the report said, "of a serious insurrection at Harper's Ferry, Virginia. The trains were stopped, telegraph wires cut, and the town and all public works were in the possession of the insurgents. All statements concur that the town is in complete possession of the insurgents, together with the armory, the arsenal, the pay offices, and the bridges. The insurgents are composed of whites and blacks, supposed to be led on by abolitionists." Rumor hardened into fact. The ringleader of the assault on Harper's Ferry was John Brown, a Connecticut-born militant opponent of slavery, who had waged bloody attacks on pro-slavery settlers in Kansas several years earlier. Brown was quickly captured by U.S. Marines, who killed many of his cohorts, and within 36 hours, the insurgency was put down. The Mercury saw the failed revolt as a signal. "As we anticipated," the paper commented at week's end, "the affair in its magnitude was quite exaggerated, but it fully establishes the fact that there are, at the North, men ready to engage in adventures upon the peace and security of the Southern people, however heinously and recklessly, and capable of planning and keeping secret their infernal designs. It is a warning profoundly symptomatic of the future of the Union with our sectional enemies." After John Brown was on trial for treason and expecting execution, the Mercury also turned the episode into a political rallying cry against the North. "The great source of the evil is that we are under one government with these people," it declared at the start of November. "If we had a separate government of our own, the post office, all the avenues of intercourse, the police and military of the country would be under our executive control. Abolitionism would die out at the North, or its adherents would have to operate in the South as foreign emissaries, in a country armed and prepared to exclude their intercourse or arrest their designs and punish their intervention. The South must control her own."